What's going on, everybody? Welcome back. Welcome back to Three Educated Brothers, a podcast about all things education through the experiences of three black men in the field. My name is Gladstone.
My name is Mark.
Yeah, my name is Edmund.
And we are thrilled to be back on the air, back connecting with y'all. And we just gonna, you know, it's been a while since we seen each other.
Yeah, it's been months. It feels like a lot of things has happened since then.
Yeah, man. Yes, the last episode that we dropped was on March 25th, and now we in October.
Yeah, so it's been a minute since we all like really chilled and engaged with each other, and we're back and we're recording a podcast. And this first episode of season two, we just want to check in. Right, we want to talk to each other and see, you know, what's new in our lives. And I think we all have gone through some substantial growth over the last few months.
Yes, sir.
And I think it's important and also fun to kind of take our listeners on this kind of journey with us about, like, you know, how are we changing as men of color, how are our jobs impacting us, how are our careers impacting us in our personal lives as well, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess I'll start off and share that, man, It's been a minute, yeah?
Yeah.
And I think for me personally, I miss having these conversations. Because, you know, I hear people talking about the podcast. And like, yo, like, you know, people like ask me, like, yo, see what season two? I'm like, all right, the show is coming. Like, relax. But also, you know, just me being in the space with y'all, just having like these intimate but also challenging conversations where I get to reflect on my experiences is super therapeutic. Mm. And I kind of miss that space. And I miss, like, talking to people who understand my perspective, who don't always have to explain, like, okay, I'm a black male. Mm-hmm. I'm from this, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. We could skip all that and really get into nitty gritty and like really get into the conversation about what can we do? How can we change? How can we become better? So for me personally, where have I been? I finished my first year in the academy officially.
Congrats.
And it was interesting. You know, it was super interesting. Just you know, being a professor, it's an interesting space, right? Because I think I wrote a blog actually about this. It's on my website, and where I reflect. And every year, this is good practice for teachers too. I always encourage teachers to do this at the end of the school year, during the summer months. Take that time to write, to do something to reflect on your entire school year. Like, really think about your practice, think about your personal life, how those things intersect, and what, you know, what are your goals? Set goals for yourself next year as an individual. Is it like, I'm gonna have more self care,
right?
Or is it, I'm gonna like be a better teacher in terms of grading my students' work on time, whatever the case may be. But
that's a good practice to have in life.
Yeah, it's dope. Yeah. You know, but as for educators, because we have that downtime in the summer, it's always good to like do at the, for me, it's always good to do at the end of the school year to reflect. Yeah. And I've been doing it since college, right? Since I was in school. And I wrote a blog because there was a lot of, I think over the past couple months, I've been feeling a lot of tension within myself, between like who I am as an individual, who I'm aspiring to be as an academic within my career, like kind of like my career persona and identity. And I realized like those two things have kind of engaged in this kind of internal conflict within myself. And like the first year of the academy it wasn't super challenging. I had a good time. I think my students really enjoyed my classes. I enjoy my students. What was super challenging for me as an academic is the space that I work in. Not the school per se, but just the academic, structured, formal, traditional, white.
The bureaucracy of that too.
And then on top of it, the bureaucracy and the politics of navigating these spaces. Because that's not who I am.
Right.
I'm not a super formal person. I don't think teaching and learning always has to happen in a formal setting or in a formal space or formally, period. But what I realized is that I think this, even as myself as a black male, like I've come to this field and I've come to this career, I think on a complete different trajectory than most people, right? I did not grow up wanting to be a professor. I did not grow up wanting to work in an office or wanting to like be like just work in higher education in general. I just saw myself as a teacher, somebody who educated young people of color so they can like be great. Right, and encourage them, and hopefully my students can maximize their full potential. And now I've transitioned from doing that to teaching at a predominantly white institution, a Catholic institution, and it was just completely different, right? So like the rules of engagement are different,
right.
The students are different, what people value in this space is also different,
right?
And I think what I realized over some time in reflecting is I don't think that I was valued as a man of color. mm-hmm. right? Or as a person of color in that space. And, you know, I don't think it was intentional, but I it still happened nonetheless, right? I think the value of, I'm the only black faculty member in my program, in my department, and everybody wants to highlight, like, oh, like, you know, I bring in a different skill set or a right. different set of experiences than other people have that's valuable to my students, right? Mm-hmm. I think everybody acknowledges that, right? People appreciate that, and I can appreciate that because that's what I bring to the table, right? But I think at the same time, it's so I'm bringing something to the table, and how is the university supporting me as an individual whose needs are different than everybody else's,
right.
In my department or in my institution, right? I think there's not much value. We want to have black scholars and black academics in these institutions, but there's nothing being done for them.
Mm-hmm.
We're not looking. I think we look at it. There's too much looking like, okay, they're here and that's good enough.
Right.
Right. But how is the same thing we talk about, like NYC men teach and yeah. teachers and you know, they're recruiting all these men of color. But how do you keep them there?
Keeping
right.
them, right.
Right. And it's not about keeping them. It is about keeping them happy. Right. But it's not about like, you know, let me give you these X, Y, and Z to
supporting
make you happy.
Right,
it's
right.
about like actual support.
Right. What that
right?
looks like for them. Right?
You know, what does that support look like? How can we value you? How can we value your scholarship and your research?
Right.
How can we support you? I think, you know, those things are kind of lacking in my experiences. And I feel like I had to seek it elsewhere.
Right.
Mm. Right. And thankfully enough, I'm still in kind of my home city where like I do have connections with people. But I don't know if I were to engage in higher ed or in the academy leaving home, I'll probably be a mess.
Mm.
Right. Because I can imagine like you not having a connection. Like for me, last year, I was always going back to my middle school where I taught. I still go back. I try to go back every week, every other week. Just to kind of refresh,
right, right?
Just so I don't forget what's, you know, where I came from.
Home.
In a sense, yeah, it's home, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm going through. If I'm having a rough week, I know I can always go back and I can get loved on by my kids.
It's like recharged.
Yeah, right. And who would ever think that you would go back to a public school building to recharge,
right?
But that's where I really that's where I found myself oftentimes
because
I know the kids in that space love me. I know the you know my colleagues in that space appreciate me. And they value me and they see me.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it's also the perception of being seen.
And the validation that you get from that space.
Yeah, the validation,
too, right?
Yeah.
Because I feel like in the spaces that you're working in, you weren't appreciating. But when you walk in that school building, it's like, oh, snap.
Yeah.
He's back to see us. But also, like, because I feel like I talk about this all the time, that education is extremely validating because, like, students, and when you do good work, students see your heart.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's extremely validating. Like, I walk in school and I feel like a rock star.
Yeah.
Just because, like, I know, like, what I bring to the space, and I feel like my kids receive that, like,
right.
that love, you know? So, I'm in my third year of teaching, and I feel like I know what I'm doing. You know what I'm saying? And at this point,
snap.
I feel like the kids that I know, they're like seniors now. So, they're talking to the freshman, like, yo, that's Mark. Don't mess with him.
Mm.
You know? Or like, I got a reputation that precedes me now. So like the kids, oh, you Mark? I heard about you now.
Right.
And I feel like my name is my, you know what?
Was your name ring bells out here in these
my
streets?
Name is my name. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh,
like,
all right.
Like,
my bad,
like,
pusher.
Like they know who I am, but for good reason.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm thinking about like, yo, what's the, like, at your school, you left a good legacy.
Right.
That even the kids that don't know you, like, they hear about you.
Right.
Like, you, like, walking legend. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because of you know, who you are, but what you've done for the institution. You know what I'm saying? So it's great to see that it's, like, symbiotic, the fact that, like, you can go there and get recharged, and I'm sure those kids get something by seeing you.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think, you know, another thing that really, like, that's been taking a toll on me in this past year is just the bureaucracy of higher education, right? It's so political, right?
Mm-hmm.
For me, like, I was in a public school. You could go, if your administrator trusts you, like, yo, just whatever you want to do.
Right.
Do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Facts.
And the type of person I am, I just like to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going to start an after school program. I'm going to start next week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to recruit the kids and we're going to get it popping.
Right.
And I could do anything at the drop of a dime
right.
in my own time. But in higher ed, it's like, okay, let's meet. All right, what do you guys think?
Logistics.
Let's meet again.
Right.
You should go talk to that person. You should do this.
Right.
And it's like, at the end of all of that, it's like, yo, we've been having these conversations for a whole year, six months plus.
Just to do this one thing.
And it hasn't even gotten done yet.
Yeah.
So it's less action-based. And I think the biggest struggle that I'm having is, like, I always like to be somebody who is hands-on, who can see the results of the work that I'm, the impact of the work that I'm doing.
Right?
And I don't see that.
Right.
And I don't think I'm being as impactful as I once was, right? In terms of like hands-on, right? I know with the research and the scholarship, it's impacting because people are reading it and, you know, my students are engaging in it as well. Right. But it's also like, you know, how do I guess I'm still trying to figure out my identity within this space and what that looks like for me as an individual. Like, what do I do? So for me, I think I'm just trying to find like projects that are outside of the institution that kind of feed my heart and that feed my soul.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what y'all been up to?
I mean, you feel you give us a lot.
You got to put it down.
Nah, but part of what I heard you say too, like this, like having these conversations at TC on this mic with you two, kind of shows me how like that your school is validating, but this space is also really, really affirming and validating as well. Right. Too, you know, one of the things I missed was like, oh, I'm gonna see Pat and Ed today, so I'm gonna have a chance to release.
Right.
Because like me, although I'm not. Although I'm surrounded by black and brown people a lot at my job, right? There's not a lot of avenues all the time to express this with other black men, right? Because I'm the only black man in my department and I'm working with like phenomenal women.
Right.
But there's nothing like connecting with like brothers, you know what I'm saying? So where I've been, again, so year number three, I feel like I know what I'm doing. Less anxiety around the teaching. But I'm really, really, really focused on like deepening the craft and the pedagogy. You know what I'm saying? I understand that my presence as a man, as a black man, is vibranium. I'm trying to create something. I'm trying to mine this vibranium something new now. You know what I mean? Yeah. So like, I've just been doing a lot of things I wasn't doing before. Like really, 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 really looking at my students' writing, looking at the reading skills. Like how do I really, really, really get kids to read? Past the content, but for really comprehension.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That critical lens.
Right. And when I say, I think this year I feel joy in the classroom, I think the kids see it. You know what I'm saying?
I saw it when I visited.
Yeah, I feel like, it's not only confidence, but I feel like I'm in the process of showing them what joy looks like, right? And I teach a hip hop class now too, and that class is super super chill. It's like I feel like I'm on TV because the kids come in every Wednesday. It's Cypher Wednesdays, so like we'll play like some hip hop, right? I play an instrumental. I give them the lyrics. They reorganize the lyrics and they present it back, and we juxtapose that with the direct lyrics, like the actual lyrics, you know. So I'm really really enjoying that. I feel like I have so much to say. The teaching is going really, really well. Also, side projects. My girlfriend and I started this, what we call this M&M Meetup.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a plug. So it's a place for couples to celebrate their relationship. So literally, we meet once a month. We invite all couples all over the city to come out, and we literally play games and talk about relationships. And it's a fun environment over drinks. And conversations and games that we actually make up, which is really, really dope.
That's what's up.
And great. And then, if I told y'all, she just moved in like 2 weeks ago. So, you know, a lot of newness,
Is there enough sneaker space?
Is there enough sneaker space? I don't have that many sneakers. But, you know, I think with great change comes, like, great responsibility, I feel like, too. Right? Mm. Like, for Ed, like, you mean hire Ed, right? Like, you are forced. You're being stretched in different ways, right? Like you're used to working up like this, snapping fingers, right? But now you like forced to like slow down. But I think you're developing a new skill set working with people who don't look like you. And for me, I'm like, oh snap! Like I'm not in a space with myself anymore. I'm learning how to share a space to communicate better. Mm-hmm. So I feel like our relationship is growing, not only in love, but just I'm learning new skills as a person dealing with another person. Because like I'm not coming home alone anymore. I'm coming home to somebody who has their own histories.
Right.
So like, I love that kind of work too.
Go ahead, boy.
You know, I'm trying out here, man. You know what I'm saying? How about you, Pat? Where you at, man?
Hey, man.
Give us that word, Pat.
I'm not at the M&M meetups because a brother's single out here. So. But
I'm plug too.
It's a plug. Available.
Define available. I'm out here, man. Like, hearing what y'all are talking about, I'm hearing this through line of just like really understanding who we are as people, our purpose on this earth, our vocation, but also like the energy that we present when we come into spaces and how other people see us. I think one of the biggest ways that I've grown is just realizing the type of energy and the type of relationships that I was cultivating and you know, those that like were beneficial in my life and beneficial to the other parties in that relationship, mm-hmm. and you know, those that were a little bit toxic in my life. I find that I have this like cyclical nature, especially when it comes to like romantic relationships, where it's like I like what's not good for me, the forbidden fruit type thing.
Come on now.
And it's just become ultimately like I think that I'm at the place where I'm able to really look at all of my experiences as true. You know, like in the work of mastery-based education, we say that, like, you know, there's no such thing as failure. It's only like a snapshot of where you're currently at. And like, you know, if, assessments are more opportunities to see where you're at on your progression towards like who you're going to be. And so like, I really have seen that throughout the past. I know like in the last season, I was talking a lot about therapy and like mental health. And I think that I have just navigated the depths of my like soul and brain so much that now I'm taking a step out and it's almost like comfortable, like it's a breath of fresh air, because you know, I've navigated the depths. And so, you know, like sometimes people would be like, yo, why are you so serious, or like why is this affecting you so much? And really what it is like I need to hit things head on, to understand them, so that there's no fear, so that now it's like, you know, I understand how I react to certain things, I understand how I'm triggered, and I can kind of navigate the world knowing to avoid or knowing how to handle it when it comes up. And so like one of the biggest things that I've been doing for just self-care, self-love, is like taking ownership over my passions outside of work. So I've really been diving into photography, really been picking up again on with like my spoken word / poetry, and you know, burning a lot of candles and incense, man.
Hey, that's what's up,
you
man.
Know, like
catch
out
him
here,
on 16th,
bro.
Y'all.
You know what I'm saying? 25th. I'm out here, bro. And then, you know, making moves in the workplace as well. But you know, I as I'm hearing y'all and your experiences within the classroom, something that I do miss is interacting with students as much as as much as I used to. You know what I'm saying? Like working in a central office, it is an interesting relationship between talking about the work of equity and actually being in it.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of conversations that happen, like just in the higher ups, and you know, and these conversations are not really involving students. And so, like, you know, my good friend Matt Gonzalez has been doing this work with New York City Appleseed, and he has like a student coalition called ACID, and they do a lot of amazing work with like student advocacy and desegregation efforts. And so, you know, like getting involved anywhere that I can with interacting with students has been alleviating to my soul and being, and you know, fuels the work, as y'all know.
You know? Comment that I'm seeing is that like we've these past from March to October, 7 months, we've done a lot of self work in our lives, you know what I'm saying? And I feel like when we create self work in our lives, it gives us the opportunity to like appreciate but see things now differently, right? Recognize our patterns, right? And I feel like I low key feel like top episode we had last season was the therapy episode, because I feel like not only we had Courtney and Amadi here, right? But we had like from then on, I saw us like really changing and thinking intuitively about who we are, and like we'll be coming to this space. You know what I'm saying?
This is the whole idea of like self care,
right?
Like I think self awareness, but then also like when you're hyper aware of yourself and you're hyper aware of your space, especially as Black men, right? It could be kind of traumatic,
right?
In a sense, right? Or it could be like kind of depressing, right? Because of the actual realities of Black men in our country right now. But then how do you align that with self-care,
right
that you know, so that you take care of your mental health and like you're rested and your well-being is taken care of, so you can go back and do this work.
Yeah,
I think the reality with us and all the spaces that we are is that we're in is we're number one, we're needed in those spaces,
right.
I think I don't talk about my experience and say like, you know, because I'm a man of color, I don't necessarily belong here, I don't feel comfortable here. But I think I'm needed in that space. I think we're all needed in our spaces.
Yeah.
Right. But then I don't think the world realizes how much of a toll it takes on us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think the hype is like, you know, men of color and education or whatever is dope.
Mm-hmm.
But then I don't think people recognize like how challenging it is, especially when you're a man of color, especially if just a person in general who is fighting against inequities.
Right.
Right. It's challenging because like I feel like everybody feels like in our society we're just taking a couple steps backwards. Mm-hmm. But what we're fighting is good fight that we all believe in, but you know, where's the progress,
right?
When do we actually see progress? Like there's been a lot of crazy stuff in the media and our politics and our government over the last couple of weeks. We got Kanye, right?
Kavanaugh.
Yeah. Right?
All of them.
We got Kaepernick. Me too.
Oh, snap. All of these Ks.
Right? Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So it's a lot going on. But for me, in terms of self-care, right. I was talking to Mark about this the other day. I had my first therapy session.
Yo. I just want to say, man, I was driving and I got a call. I got a text from Ed, like, yo, my first therapy appointment. And I want to say, like, I didn't say this before. I was having a rough day, yo. And when you said that to me,
I felt it.
I looked at my girlfriend. I was like, yo, Ed is in therapy. You know what I mean?
You're going to be all right. Yeah, right,
you're going to be all right. Because listen, man, like, it just speaks to the commitment of the work that when I'm going to say, I'm going to make it specific. When black men share, right? When I share, right? I open up room for others to share as well, too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it was like a domino effect as well, you know? And like, just to hear Ed saying like, yo, like, I'm in therapy now. It was like, nah, I couldn't see it, but the fact that like, I know he could benefit from it so much. And the fact that he's like sharing that publicly, like with me and then on the podcast, it's like, yo, like, this is why I continue to come back to see you guys do this work, you know?
Yeah,
so I would love for you to share, like...
Yeah, it was dope, man. I got into a point in my life, I think a lot of it is, like, you know, just life-related, work-related, right? But then ultimately, just, like, just feeling really anxious or just being really... Just having somebody to talk things through. Mm. And there's something... Since the therapy episode, like, yo, you know, you know where I was at a year ago. I wasn't 100% sold.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always something that I've always was intrigued about. Like, I can't knock it if I haven't tried it.
Right.
And I remember talking to Mark, and I think one of the challenging things for me, because I've been trying to find somebody to go to for about a couple months. It's just numbers access.
Yeah.
And it's a representation.
Mm. Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, I'm not going to therapy to talk to somebody who doesn't understand my reality.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not going to take the time out of my schedule and think that somebody who doesn't look like me or somebody who hasn't experienced things similar to me is going to be able to talk things through with me.
And what was Marty said, like 2% nationwide is
people
like,
of color.
Yeah, people of
color.
Yeah,
man. So I lucked out and I found a woman of color. It's a black woman.
Uh-huh.
And it was just dope. I went to the first session. The first session was like really, I was like, I went in there like, you know, I have my radar's up, you know what I mean? And I'm just, but it was just, it flows so natural, right?
Yeah.
She's actually like pretty bright. She understood.
I'm laughing. You said pretty bright.
No, it's real because like you talk to people, it's like, yo, man, like, it's like, why am I even, like, what's the point?
You have no time for incompetence.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, especially in the world I'm in, there are a lot of incompetent folk out here with these degrees.
Right.
Waving them around. So,
yeah.
I can appreciate that, that we had such a dynamic conversation we just had one session. Right. And I actually left there. Like, it was kind of a thing, like, I didn't even feel I was in therapy.
Mm.
Right. I just felt I was talking to somebody who... Because I like talking to people.
Right.
So I just felt like I was talking to somebody who understood me.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think when I left there, I realized like, wow, like I got my people, I got my boys I talk to, I got my friends,
yeah.
You know, I got my fiance, but it's also important to like not pour all of that into people who are also dealing with their own things.
So true.
And I realized that's why it's so important to go seek the support from an expert.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
It felt good. Was just conversations.
Congrats, bro.
Just conversations.
Congrats.
Yeah, we're just talking and talking things through and providing suggestions and just you know, somebody to because when you talk to people, people often want to tell you what you want to hear, right? When you talk to you, especially people who love you,
right?
When you're going through something traumatic, crazy, like, hey, blah blah blah, you're like, yeah, it's gonna you'll be all right, you know. But the therapist is like, okay, so what can you do to change the situation, or what would you like?
Mm-hmm. Right.
She asked me a question.
What'd you wish?
Yeah, she asked me a question. I was like, yo, I could even. She asked me. What would make me happy? And I said, I don't know.
And that's what I'm talking about. Like, questions that, like, I feel like in our own spaces, like, we're not even asked that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's always around, like, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Right.
Like, and that's sometimes disconnected from happiness. Mm-hmm. So, like, these questions are kind of hitting at, like the soul. And like we said about therapy especially, too, because I feel like my therapist is the one person in my life who I feel like... is 100% about me, for me, all the time.
They're getting paid to.
You're getting paid to. I'm like, you know what? And I go front, like I said on the therapy episode, like, it was expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But I, when talking to, like, you know, my support system was like, yo, we're worth that much.
Right.
That's how much, we're worth that much. And I can see the gains that therapy has made in my own life. Right. You know what I mean? I'm looking forward to keep building. As I'm learning, like, as life is happening, you know what I mean? New things come up, mm-hmm. you know, and things are, like, connected. So it's pretty dope that, like, you know, just to see us, like, going through this space. And I'm interested to hear, like, how, as we're changing, because we're seeking support and self-care, how the podcast is going to, like, even be more vulnerable, right, be more right, open, right. and be even more validating. Because I feel like we all take and bring something to this space that is not often reflected in other places in our lives as well.
That's mm-hmm. real.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, man, I feel good. I think we want to talk about a little bit, like, since so much has passed in the media and in the mm-hmm. news, right? I was wondering, like, since so many things have been happening, what's, like, one thing, you know, in the media or in the news in your life that you was, like, has really, really affected, kind of gave, like, a paradigm shift as to how you see the world and how you see things? Mm-hmm. Where'd you go first? Back? Go ahead.
Yeah. Start?
Yeah, there's so many things. I don't even know where to start.
Pick one, bro.
You know,
yeah,
something,
yeah.
When the topic came up, something that really came to mind and still sits with me is, you know, there's been a couple of deaths within the music industry. There was, like, XXXTentacion. There was, like, the one that really hit me was Mac Miller. Mm-hmm. That was something that, you know, I remember I was on a camping trip in Acadia, Maine, and on the way up, like, before the weekend had started, we got the news that, you know, he had overdosed, and that really hit me, because his music kind of exemplifies the vulnerability that, you know, we believe in here, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of, like, speaking things so that others know that other people are going through these things. Right. You know, he's battled with depression for a long time. And, you know, there's so many themes in music that I always think about. It's like Kanye been telling us that he's had mental issues. But sometimes when the beat is hot, we'll just bang to it. You know what I'm saying? Right. And so, like, we love him until he starts really getting in our face. And, like, you know, obviously he's been doing problematic things, but we do have a tendency to, like, hear artists like crying for help and really just kind of, like, you know, taking them for what they're worth in terms of the music impact. And then also the impact of, you know, seven of his albums and mixtapes went, you know, like, top on iTunes. Right. And it's like that kind of, like, weird paradox where it's like once somebody passes is when you show them love, yeah, or show them homage. It's like, it's damn, you know? And so that's something that really sat with me. And it also, like, because that's like the downside. The positive is like, in his 26 years of life, the amount of people that he's impacted, the amount, you know, it's like, it reminds you to really, really be out here living for nobody else but the love that you want to provide, you know, like, yeah, really, really trying to make that impact. I want to just read a quote that, like, stuck with me from, you know, it's a song on his album Swimming. It's called 2009. And I was listening to that song just on repeat on the way back. But it's, you know, he says, "Isn't it funny? We can make a lot of money, buy a lot of things just to feel a lot of ugly. I was high and muddy, looking for what was looking for me." Mm-hmm. And that just really stuck with me, like, looking for what was looking for me. The thought that, like, whatever it is that's looking for you is looking for you.
Right.
You know, we're so busy looking at what we want. There's something that's looking for us.
Yeah. You know what I want to highlight, since we, like, you know, we got educators listening, the practicality around rap, like, hip hop artist death, especially as of late, right? Mm-hmm. Because I was having a conversation with somebody, we were just talking, and I think I was making the argument, which I think is a problematic argument, but I was kind of just exploring the space at that time, that oftentimes hip hop artists, that they kind of seek death.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like the those who are going, like, follow me with this.
Yes.
Not that they seek death, right? But they're not afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they kind of welcome it because of what happens afterwards.
Mm. The ferocity.
Right. It's the idea that, yo, now you're idolized,
right,
and now if you die as a hip hop artist or somebody who was just, like, kind of buzzing and who mm-hmm. has a decent following, like, now they're calling XXX the Tupac of our generation.
Stop it.
Really?
No, but it's real. Yeah. And then to keep it a buck, I can understand why, because his music resonated. Although his music was very problematic, I think he was a problematic individual, mm-hmm. right? I think he made decent music. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I like his music.
But I think there's a piece of it that young people can connect to, mm-hmm. right? Similar to the whole Mac Miller thing, right? He passed, and now all his music is kind of like on top of the charts.
Mm-hmm.
It's because you have to die to be seen,
mm-hmm.
right? In our communities, oftentimes, like once you pass away, it's like, oh, now let's memorialize them, right? I don't think we're pouring enough into our young people now about what they really want, about who they really are,
and they value,
right? Mm-hmm. They don't feel valued, mm-hmm. and a lot of young people right now, they're walking around, they don't feel value, and they don't care about life because they have nothing to look forward to,
mm-hmm.
right? Nobody values them. They don't know where their lives are going. They don't understand the trajectory, mm-hmm. right? They don't. They may not want to go to college,
right?
And that's the only route that's being presented to them. So it's like young people are like, oh, like, wow, like he went out like that.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it kind of idolized them in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying we can't idolize people who have passed. But then it's like, don't just idolize them because they passed.
Right.
I think Mac Miller is a super talented artist. Mm-hmm. Like, he played piano. He's a dope lyricist. Yeah. He's a producer. XXX was talented in his own right. But I think with the whole XXX death or passing or murder, is that, like, I think a lot of educators could use that opportunity as a moment to, like, interrogate his life.
Mm.
Right? His problematic life, like him and his, like the domestic violence mm-hmm. allegations. I don't know if it's, but you know, those things that he kind of struggled with. And then the young people would argue, well, you know, this, he was, that was his past and he was becoming a better person. Mm-hmm. Right. But it's like, unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to see the better ex. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm not saying he passed away as a horrible person, but we can use the opportunity to interrogate his personality, who he presented and why he presented it. And get used as an opportunity to let kids explore their identities,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, this is rough though, because like it's just, there's so much coming up. I find it almost problematic to not your idea, but the idea that people like are glorified or held on this level once they pass away, right? Because mm-hmm. then I wonder like what message that sends to our kids right. And our students, right. you know. And to be honest, I wasn't a fan. Not anti, but I wasn't a fan. I didn't listen to XXX mm-hmm. music or mm-hmm. Mac Miller, mm-hmm. you know. But I remember, like, I was like, man, I'm 26 too,
right?
You know,
you can still connect to something.
I can connect
somewhere.
To that too, and I was like, yo, like all that glitters isn't really gold, mm-hmm. right? You know what I mean? And although I didn't know anything about his music, I was like, man, if this man could commit, if this man could overdose, right? Mm-hmm. And he go through, I think about the kids, my kids who's going through what they're going through. Mm-hmm. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And if people. Are going through whatever they're going through and seeking, like, I don't know, like, substance abuse
right.
happens, right? Like, so can my students as well, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just yesterday, I was in the hospital for one of my former students, and because she's going through whatever it is, and seeing her hooked up to IVs,
mm-hmm.
like, and, like, on dialysis machine
yeah.
at the age of 18,
mm-hmm. yeah.
was like, yo, like...
It's real.
It's real, right? Yeah. And, like, that death is... around the corner for a lot of people, right?
Right.
But shifting gears, I think one thing that was a major for me, I feel like we could do a
whole podcast
on this.
One second. Yes. Before we move on from it,
yeah.
I do, like, on the topic of, like, seeking death or, you know, I do think that by saying that, we can't alleviate the role that we all play in, you know, in anyone who is in the limelight, anyone who is seeking, you know, stardom or whatever it may be. Like, we all play a part in validating their role, like in the reason why they feel like they're not doing enough.
Right.
Like, it's all about other people. Like, I always have this hashtag, I am because we are.
Right.
Because nothing happens without other people. People want to be like, damn, Mac died. Like, but thinking about how depression is perpetuated by society and our role in it. Like, he has another line. I could read Mac Miller quotes for days, but he had another line in his song Small World where he says, "Nobody know me, oh well, hard to complain from this 5-star hotel."
Mm.
And he says that in an almost like facetious way.
Right,
it's like,
because
I can't say, I can't be upset, I can't be depressed because I have money.
Mm.
Like, but that don't come with you when you die, you know what I'm saying? And he knows that now. And like, you know, you look at a lot of his music videos and a lot of them are very metaphorical. He has one, it's called Self-Care,
mm-hmm.
where he begins in a coffin and he's like nailing his way out of the coffin. Wow. Like, you know what I mean? In that way, it's like, so if somebody is predicting their death, why the obvious answer is like, why don't you just not die or not kill yourself?
Why don't we listen to them?
Yeah, like, but why don't we listen to them? Like, what, and why do things hit after death for everybody?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, this also reminds me too, like, just like on my heart too, just like, yo, like, I see it on Instagram at least once a week, right? Like, check on your strong friends. Mm. You know what I mean? Because, like, I think society, we don't know what people are going through. Mm. And, like, we're always performing. Like, we're performing right now on this podcast. We are performing. In a class, we're performing. Right? At home, we're performing these roles, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes when we don't have people to connect to, or people not checking on us, that, like, we can often feel like nobody cares.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I think it's important that we, like, check on each other, just to call. Like, there's been like twice I think Edmund called me like, yo, I'm just checking in to see how the meetup was. You know, I'm like, oh snap, like Edmund really cares, like that's what's up, that means a lot to me. It just so happens that he called like at those moments I was like, dang, like I was going through X, Y, and Z. You know, cause like you never know, you know. That's why when I feel a certain kind of way, I'm like, oh, like someone comes across my mind, I feel like energy's contagious.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, my energy is telling me, or the spirit, whatever you want to call it, it's telling me to check on my people. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
One thing that kind of stuck out to me, and I really hate to like talk about this, but the Brett Kavanaugh situation, really, really, really spoke to my heart. It's all messed up in all the ways, but it really, really, really made me think about just me as a man all over again. You know what I'm saying? The way I express myself and the way I listen or choose not to listen.
Yeah.
It really made me think about like, wow, like male privilege is so pervasive in society, that you could have this man on the highest courts be a judge, right? And like the way he ascended and who supports him, right? That male privilege is so ingrained into the fabric of like our well-being, that even the people that it marginalizes and affects, they support him too.
Right.
White women. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And other black people support like people like Trump too. Like male privilege is just like, it's just interesting to see how it functions. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I was talking to my girlfriend too. We were having a disagreement, and she said something to the fact that like, you see that way because you're a man. And I was just like, wow. And I had to take a step back, and I was like, you know what? Let me listen. Mm-hmm. Right? Because I could have easily discounted how she felt.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm realizing like, yo, like, I'm really with the Believe Woman movement, you know? Simply because, like, I never really had to listen before when I was younger, right? Mm-hmm. But now I'm like, I need to really listen when a woman is saying X, Y, and Z.
Like, really listen.
Really, really listen. Yeah. And not listen to respond, but listen to understand.
Yeah.
And listen to also reflect, right? And it's, I'm asking questions like, well, what do you wish I would have said? How does this make you feel? Right. Mm-hmm. And give them that platform, because I think now it's just like, I could really, if I really wanted to exercise male privilege, right, it'd probably be okay, and nobody could check me, because I'm not abusing physically, emotionally, things like that, consciously, right? But in ways in which I interact, it could be viewed as that as well too.
What would you say to women who feel as if like you asking them is already putting the burden back on them? Like, sometimes I feel that, you know, with white colleagues, it's like, it's not my responsibility to educate you on things that are, you know, we've made it binary by doing it, you know, having it be by gender. These are life issues. And the fact that you're not well versed in them, you as in the general you, is more reflective on what you need to do as opposed to like me providing the answer.
But don't you appreciate it as a person of color when a white person like genuinely asks you?
Yeah.
It's hard. Mm. It's hard at times to know what is genuine.
That's true.
Because sometimes it's a cop out. Sometimes it's just, I'm not trying to put in this work. Like if I'm in a diversity panel or like a retreat or something and somebody asks me that, sometimes it feels like, well, I'm here.
Right.
And y'all want me here.
And it's the work that we're doing.
So yeah, like, so, you know, and that's just a genuine question, because I'm trying to, you know, I think back to the rape culture episode that we had in season one, and some of the feedback that I received just about the depth to which we went in makes me, you know, like, I don't know, those questions just keep coming up where it's like, we are at the end of the day, like even sometimes having this conversation is a way to posit some sort of movement yes. in the direction of like, you know, bringing light to these conversations or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But then like also in the direction that we move, how do we know when we're stepping on toes, even if it's with our intentions?
It's true. You know what I'm saying? It's so true. Yeah. And it's rough, man, because I'm like, I look at Kavanaugh, I'm like, dang, like this man is clearly problematic, right? And I looked at myself and I'm like, yo, where in my life am I seeing and moving things and not being aware of the toes I'm stepping on?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thankful I have a group of women in my life, and so my colleagues especially, where I feel comfortable and I'm like, when I did this thing, was it okay? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I think that I'm so... I'm thinking about it so much sometimes that, to be honest, it makes it hard for me to interact sometimes. I'm just like, man, like I feel I'm constantly being aware of this thing,
right,
you know? And that even sounds like male privilege. I have been aware of my male privilege. But I'm just like, I realize every day I'm growing in this situation. Where I was yesterday is not where I am today. Like, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? I'm really trying to grow. And I think that is, there's the growing within myself, and it's also like, how do I hold other men accountable, and can mm-hmm. I hold them accountable?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's a different kind of work, especially black men accountable. Like, right. You know what I mean? I already have my own problematic things. I gotta tell Pat Edmund, like, that's not okay too.
Right.
Because behind closed doors, like, I think we all are complicit in this locker room talk, not like 45, right? But it happens. Yeah.
Yo, but that Kavanaugh journey is crazy.
Yeah, man.
Like, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, shit, I didn't have any expectation,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the thing, where we are in the world of politics,
mm-hmm.
it's so much going on, right? So my only form of engagement in politics is just voting.
Yeah.
I can't engage any more than that.
Right, yeah.
And with the Brett Kavanaugh situation, like, it's a job interview.
Right.
It wasn't a court case.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? It was a job interview.
Mm-hmm.
And how hostile he was.
Yeah.
In
contrast to Blasey Ford and how she was, you know, she said it, her first line was, I'm scared right now, but I feel like this is what I need to do.
Yeah.
And like the feeling of having to validate your existence through like reliving your trauma.
Right. Yeah. But even beyond that, right? I think like, yes, like she's super dope for doing that. Right. And sharing her story publicly, but then even just having allegations, multiple allegations, and then, you know, a couple of people to corroborate those allegations should be enough. I'm not saying to jail him
mm-hmm.
at this very instance,
mm-hmm.
but what I'm saying is to deny his application.
Right.
But
then,
you know, this is America 2018.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what's so scary. And I think that also, like, it just takes a toll on you. Like, it's like, if this is how they out here moving, then like kind of sometimes like, what's the point of doing this work? We never gonna reach the plateau.
Yeah.
Right. Do y'all remember back when Obama was running? He wore a tan suit,
mm-hmm.
and that was like Obama. That was the news, thing,
right?
Bro.
Michelle Obama's on the shoulder, right?
See, the thing with the tan suit, that was Easter.
Everybody know what Easter means.
Start a little different.
Yes,
Easter.
Yes.
And that's just American understanding black culture,
right?
Yeah.
But it's just like you know, it's like little silly thing. I think this is what I talk to my students all the time about. Like, our job as educators is to create a more critically conscious group of people.
Yeah.
Right? I think our country right now, people are not conscious, they're not critically conscious, they're not critical of things. And that's when it becomes a tit for tat.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Brett Kavanaugh thing was a tit for tat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like, oh, well, he didn't do this, so he should be good. And everybody's mm-hmm. like, no, he did do it. He shouldn't
mm-hmm.
be good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more so like, okay, it's not about if he did it or if he didn't at this very instance, but like, let's be critical of everything around it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
let's also recognize that this is a job interview.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a trial.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So can we deny it? You know what I mean? Like, if we have more level-headed conversations, more critical conversations, we're really analyzing, like, depths of things and not just very surface level. You know, but it's problematic, man.
Yeah.
It's just... It's sad, yo. Right. And it's important for our kids. Like, they're growing up in these times. And right. we have to arm them with the skills to be able to navigate, number
right.
one.
Right.
But to decipher.
Yeah. yeah.
Because they're only yep. going to grow up and have more traumatic experiences it's as true. They get older if they don't know how to get, if they don't know how to work through this stuff right. within mm-hmm. themselves.
And read, right? It's
yeah.
true. It's
yeah.
super true.
You know,
super
so true. Yeah. That's where we at.
Yeah. Man, I feel like we ended on a real. We started on a high note and we went down this thing, and it's yeah. like
it be like that though. Like yeah, the, I feel like the that's truth. That's the truth. Nature of this podcast. Even is just showing the like where did we start? We started with like just checking in with ourselves, ending up with you know Kavanaugh, and it's just showing
and
the
privilege, right?
Yeah,
right,
the connectedness of everything, and yeah. like you know the importance of just having these conversations. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
You yeah. know, but on a positive note, we back.
Yes, we are back. We are back.
Yeah, we need to end on Mace again.
And they finna get this work.
Yeah,
finna get this work. I think before we close, I think that's like we don't gotta make a list of like what we gonna do, but like I had a workshop today with my kids, like office hours, and I asked them to set some goals. Mm. And before we left the room, I said, "What's one thing are you committed to bringing?" For the new year, you know, so I want to ask you all. You don't have to explain; it could be a word or like a quick thing. Like, what's one thing you're committed to bring into the podcast this year? And it could be ways of being in terms of like it don't gotta be work ethic. It just be like, yo, I'm just bringing this season.
Or bring dope shit.
All right, all right. I got you. Yeah. I'm bringing my vulnerability. That's my superpower.
Hey,
that's it. Go ahead. What about you, Pat?
I'm gonna just bring my full presence.
That's it. Yeah.
Full
that's
what's up.
That's what's up. All right, folks. I think we wrapping it up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you for joining the Three Educated Brothers podcast.
Stay tuned.
Our podcast.
Yeah, we a little rusty.
It's a little rusty.
It's been a minute.
Yeah. Catch us when you catch us.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Again, follow the Instagram. That's Three Educated Brothers.
The number three, brothers with an A-S.
And you can follow us.
For the culture.
And you can also email us at...
Info@3educatedbrothers.
com.
Yeah, we really want to hear from y'all. For real. We're going to bring in more audience feedback and you know, we want to interact with our viewers because that's at the core of what we're doing. So reach out, share feedback, comment, like, all that.
Thank you.